Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Today's Monday, right?
Yes. The lovely Monday.
Sometimes I forget that you like Monday. I'm a Friday guy because... Afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And today is a Monday. That's the 16th of March. We're just in the third month of 2026, and things have seems to just be going chaotic. And part of that chaos is what is going to be central to today's discussion on Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And that's the ongoing, you know. There's this song that's being sang in the Middle East. The title of the song is Kaboom. Song features the U.S., Israel, and Iran. That's the one that we're going to be talking about today. While most of us just woke up to that song when, during its debut on the 28th of...
What's the song's name? Kaboom.
Kaboom, yeah.
Let me first ask, is this another Ugandan special? Or is this...
This is
a Jamaican situation.
This is just a Kavango special. Now,
how would we are 3 minutes into our discussion?
Well, hit the ground running.
Okay.
Now, a lot of us only came to be aware of this song on the 28th of, the conflict, on the 28th of February. It was just a wonderful Saturday morning. We woke up to this, headline after headline of, Israel, the U.S., and Iran basically exchanging good morning greetings in form of C4. And that then translated into a lot of people trying to figure out or trying to understand or just what's going on here. And in the middle of all the chaos, news headlines or news updates were coming from both sides of the conflict, coming from from Iran, from Israel, and the U.S.
Yeah.
But a lot of YouTubers, those that are interested in geopolitics, like. And a lot of people, followers of Professor Chan, like yours truly, Dwight, have
Jiang, because you said Chan,
Professor Jiang. The first one I won't even attempt.
Shui Qin,
and not a chance.
Shui Qin. The X at this first, which is his first name,
yeah,
is a Sh, and the Q is a Ch, even though they have a Ch pronunciation already, meaning those letters exist as I'm saying them, but X and Q come part of the thing as well.
That's Mandarin grammar.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's coming back in small pieces and bits and pieces.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, the predictions have basically captured international media.
Mm.
Yeah, because the three main predictions that were basically made back in 2024, not even last year, predictions that, that were made, back in 2024, were one, Donald Trump is going to return to the White House, which he did. So that prediction is fulfilled. And prediction number two was that Donald Trump, upon returning to the White House, is most likely to wage war with Iran.
Yeah.
And that prediction again is is just underway right now. That prediction is fulfilled basically.
Yeah.
Now the last prediction is one that is basically making that man very busy right now, as as you can imagine, since everyone wants to talk to him. Yeah. I watched a bunch of videos of him being interviewed by a lot of other people, including Piers Morgan. The interesting part, is that this man is a Chinese Canadian, from what I gather.
Okay, to say Chinese Canadian is technically Canadian.
Yeah, he's basically Canadian. Yeah. That's like
You are right. He is Chinese because he definitely does have dual citizenship. Because the episode that I sent you, Yeah, the 1-hour, 5-minute episode.
Yeah.
Has a follow-up episode right after that, which is, no, it's the previous episode, where he highlights a particular talking point in terms of, when he and his parents moved from China to Canada when he was a child.
Yeah.
So he was born in China and then his parents decided to emigrate to Canada.
Canada.
So that technically means they still have one or other way, still, you know, they still hold on to their Chinese citizenship plus being Canadian, naturalized Canadians. So yes, you are right. She is Chinese Canadian or Canadian Chinese.
Now, here's the thing, though. One thing that's being pointed out is that, first of all, the two predictions were spot on. So that's why everyone is now looking, you know, very interesting to see how this conflict is going to end. And one thing that I basically find painful when it comes to this whole, you know, the last part of that prediction was that it has all become, and this is also painfully what you see on social media, it has all become a discussion of who is going to win and who is going to, you know, more like capitulate or lose. Now that's somewhat very painful, because when you look at the, you know, the countries that are now caught in a crossfire, you know, it goes to show that a lot of experts, you know, both military experts and former White House officials, including the, you know, Secretary of State under Biden, Anthony Blinken, one thing that they are pointing out was that from the White House side of things, they really didn't think these things through. Someone just woke up and decided, you know what, we have a very big army, so we'll just go to war because, well, we have an army that can fight war.
Remember back on Friday when I told you that it was a Saturday morning, the 28th of February.
Yeah.
I was still asleep.
Yeah.
You also confirmed that you were still asleep.
Definitely.
Enjoying your Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And I woke up literally to the sounds of my sister shouting at the top of her lungs, Dwight, Dwight, Dwight. The United States is delivering democracy. That, which is literally most what the US says. Most.
Yeah, they say that.
They said that for Afghanistan. They said that for Iraq. So we can use that term, even though that term is also used in a video game known as Helldivers 2, where they talk about delivering controlled democracy, and they make a weird little.
I think the entire
salute situation that is very close to what the you know the failed Austrian painter and his colleagues had developed. But yeah, we won't expand into that.
Yeah.
But when you and I highlighted that particular talking point, we are now to date, we are, it's past 12 days? Because today's the 16th of March.
Yeah.
So we're literally more than 12 days into the previous conflict, which was last year.
Yeah.
Last year was a 12-day war.
Yeah.
This
one, I think we're in day 15 or 16 because it's
probably 17 because it started on the 28th.
28th, yeah.
Yeah. So we're literally in 17 days right now. So if we've already surpassed that conflict, but it is
The first 12-day mark.
Yeah. So we've already surpassed any indication potentially of you know, some sort of a peace deal discussion popping up, because the American media and international media are continuously asking the NATO allies and the United States, what is the idea? What is the plan?
What is the end goal here?
What is the plan? And I think that's also what our listeners deserve, because here is the negatives that we're going to experience.
Yeah.
The negatives is, Helmut, we are going to experience a ugly petrol and diesel price hike.
Yeah.
If it does not happen in this month, it will probably happen in next month. And it'll be so severe because the statement that the MD of Dangote Refinery, David Byrd, he made this last week. And we did a social media post about that last week. He said literally that currently there is panic buying taking place around the world. Now, the reason why I'm citing the oil discussion, Helmut, is literally what Jiang had also pointed out when I shared that his lecture video with you, is that it's not Israel he's going to hit the hardest with missile strikes. It's not going to be Israel. And just as the million-dollar question, dear listeners, we're going to treat this like a lecture. like Jiang was treating his students. I feel sorry for his students because his students couldn't answer the basic answers of a conflict, you know, of literally warfare.
Yeah.
But if you ask yourself, dear listeners, why would Dwight say, and according also to the analysis, the logical analysis, but we've got an ad break creeping up on us, guys.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We continue.
So, when I said just before the break, why is, you know, what's the actual aim of Iran in this particular conflict? And it's not for us to take sides, guys, because I'm really doing my best not to take sides. I'm trying to maintain this, the scientific approach and neutrality, because as a quasi-academic, which I am, okay, how much am
I? You really have to start with quasi.
No, because Hamoud, you and I, we most only ended at most 3-year degree, almost. not to knock ourselves out of the discussion.
Yeah.
Because we've literally had to read a lot, you know, in terms of, you know, giving the value to our listeners. But the technical aim here is, in many cases, we don't have a lot of these particular people in Namibia, to be honest. We don't have Namibians that talk about this. We don't have enough Namibians that are international relations experts in their own right. They would either be associated to the ministry in one or other controlled manner, to a university, which has obviously also had its political linkages to the government, which makes things weird because you can't have honest, factual conversations. Because you can't have that, which is the plurality that we try to achieve, because we try to give voice to certain things without being cheerleaders to certain things.
Yeah.
Now, getting back on point, guys. So that's our quasi situation.
Yeah.
So, the biggest victims in this conflict is the global economy, the oil economy, and the Arab nations around Iran. Now, dear listeners, there are three things that Helmut and I will literally present to you which have happened already. But there's one or two anomalies, Helmut, and variables that are not happening, which also somehow, it does not mean because these anomalies and variables did not actually go in the favor of Donald Trump in the United States and Israel's Netanyahu and Israel, but primarily because there is another game taking place. Now, I did a discussion yesterday, Helmut, of on yesterday morning's, my Sunday morning take about game theory, because this was what Jiang is a professor in. He's a professor of game theory. But game theory highlights that they use economics and mathematics to work out the interests of players, meaning the participants, meaning in a participant or player can be a person, a company, an organization, or a country. But currently, much of game theory is being applied to foreign policy setting. And game theory identifies who is trying to optimize their interests for their position. Now, you can view this from backwards to front or from front to backwards. the particular situation going on. But currently what is happening, which are the facts, is that Donald Trump did inform us way in advance that there will be a war on Iran. I'll say it again. The U.S. President Donald Trump did inform us that there will be a war in Iran. He did it last year, primarily because of the bombing that took place during the 12-day war. And it happened a little bit here in December, just before Venezuela and just after Venezuela, 3 January, we saw glimpses and utterances once again. And the biggest concern out of this was, who gave him the motivation for this war?
Yeah. And the I like the use of the word motivation there, because if you look at his campaign videos, and throw in Marco Rubio in this one, one of the things that they kept pointing out, and this actually during his campaign, one of the things that Donald Trump actually said was he was basically making fun of Joe Biden, that he's going to drag the U.S. into a war with Iran because of his inability to negotiate.
Yeah.
And fast forward to 2026. Who is this now? Biden administration Secretary of State Anthony Blinken is talking to CBS or was talking to in an interview about this whole Middle Eastern a fiasco.
Yeah.
One thing he pointed out was that shortly after October 7th, the Israeli wanted Biden to back them up into going for a preemptive strike on Lebanon, because they had intelligence that Lebanon was going to attack. And according to Blinken, Biden told them, look, we can support you. We're going to defend you if you get attacked. But if you attack first, we are not coming to your help. We are not coming to help you.
Mm.
And that was the second time that was happening. That was the second time. The first time that Blinken points out was it happened again during during the Obama administration.
So they presented the same thing.
Let's go to war idea, but that was with Iran.
Mm.
And Obama at the time told them, look, we're gonna do this the diplomatic way, which is what Obama did. Obama reached a deal with Iran, that was again, struck down by
Trump
in his first term.
The JCPOA.
It was struck down by Trump. So, after Trump lost to Biden, according to Blinken, Biden spent his entire the previous administration from Trump.
Mm.
He spent that entire administration trying to get that deal back on the table. And you can understand the Iranians at this point why they were reluctant to basically take on that deal.
Yeah.
Because the response they got most of the time was, even if we get into this deal now, the next guy that is going to come after you will just, tear these things, to pieces, and this whole thing will be a waste of time. And if you ask me, they were right. Even if that deal was made with the, with the previous administration, chances are very high Trump would have torn it apart again.
And he never gave a replacement deal.
He said he was going to come up with a better one.
Yeah, like he promised, which he did not do.
If this is the better deal, then he really have to work on his definition of the word better.
No, but Helmut, it's literally the conversation in terms of why the analysis that Jung did and that interview between Blinken and the Bloomberg guy was a discussion of, what are we looking at? First and foremost, I don't know if you saw in terms of that first 10 minutes of that, the first 15 minutes of that interview.
Yeah.
It seemed like the interview's questions kept circling on the same thing, trying to define the actions, okay, the guy was trying to ask Blinken to define the actions
of the Trump administration.
Of Trump administration.
Which you kept saying, dude, I wasn't in that house.
I wasn't in this, I wasn't in the main meetings. I wasn't there. I wasn't in the secret meetings.
Look, don't drag me into this.
Yeah. So I can't give you any indication into the thinking that would be applied.
But, I like diplomacy.
No, but Helmut, he's correct.
Yeah.
I mean,
including the negotiations that were done in, supposedly in Switzerland.
In Geneva, yeah. Which was the one that was mediated by the Omanis.
That's
because the Omanis went to Al Jazeera. The Omanis were interviewed the Friday night or the Thursday night.
Yeah.
27 or 26 February. The Before Omanis, they were interviewed by Al Jazeera being asked, what does this look like? And that famous 10-second, 20-second clip of the Omani mediator, one of the representatives, the person said, you know, things look, they look promising. Now you should hear how the American media, and this is now from podcasters to their alternative media sources, which are obviously, you know, YouTube channels and the likes, like the TYT guys and the Breaking Point and all those other YouTube-based media entities. All of them are now saying, why did we send two real estate guys to go and negotiate about nuclear power discussions with the Iranians?
That's one of the questions Blinken was asking.
Yeah.
These guys were dealing with seasoned negotiators.
And they came, and these negotiators, the Iranians, were guys that had access to Iranian scientists regarding nuclear energy production and the promises that they can make to this agreement. So why did we send two glorified real estate agents to represent the United States and most of the so-called free world, which Namibia would also subscribe to in one or other way? Why were two real estate agents the front men for this discussion?
For a nuclear discussion.
And why did they not have
experts?
Nuclear experts with them?
Yeah.
And then Blinken gave us a response of, look, with every administration, reshuffling. Anticipate reshuffling, and said reshuffling means you bring in your own people or your people of similar quality.
So now they have to play catch up.
But did they play catch up, Helmut? Because Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner are sort of like the expeditionary party that sent ahead before Donald Trump flies there, and then they go make discussions. That's how that golden plane. Is it from Saudi Arabia or from Qatar?
The gift.
The gift, yeah. That's how that gift happened most. Those two guys went, negotiated the gift and said, hey, you know, give something extraordinary to the president, to my father-in-law. Uh-huh. And then that plane shows up. And then the whole world is like, who the hell has time to do this to an airplane? Well, the Qataris, they've got time.
So, and mostly the money.
Yeah, important money.
Yeah, importantly, money. Now, how'd that gift work out, though? Because
That gift was given to a foundation that no one knew existed. Trump Foundation.
Really?
No one knew the foundation existed, but that foundation existed from that day. Now, here's the biggest headache, Albert.
Yeah.
So, dear listeners, we started from a discussion of motivation. And in many cases, you and I, we forgot about these motivations, Helmut, because they exist.
Motivations behind?
Behind this conflict.
Oh, yeah. I think we just forgot them because some of them are just flat out ridiculous.
Exactly. Here's the biggest concern, Helmut. I did not take the American Jewish lobby that serious that they will actually instigate a war. I knew, like you highlighted just before the ad break, that under the Obama administration and even under Biden, the Israelis were pushing but more like a preemptive, they call it most preemptive striking.
That's just technical language for we want to go to war.
I will punch you first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that is must not a defensive treaty. That must now becomes an offensive treaty, meaning, which is literally what the Austrian painter and Stalin signed for Poland. They both signed was to say, listen, we will not attack each other, but we promise to split Poland 50-50 between us. How in the world of history, how dumb can you be by bringing your borders closer? By agreeing on something that brings your borders closer, Helmut. in the world today, as you look at military strategy today, from, let's call it the grand scale of things, the idea is that you have buffer zones between the problematic country you have an issue with and you. You don't bring the border closer. On that note, ad break, guys.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real, just like Vintuk beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintuk beer, it's that barley, hops, and water thing. Let's raise a Vintuk beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
5 o'clock on the dot. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM.
So, guys, our discussion, if you've seen our social media post on our social media platforms on Eagle FM and also wherever you call social media your particular sort of like place or interactive scenario to witness. We are talking about where this Iran conflict is going. So it is based on a lecture given by Professor Jiang Shui-Qin, who is a Canadian-Chinese professor of game theory. He did this lecture 2 years ago. Well, I don't know if it's 2 years to the date, technically, because it happened on 29 May.
But it's about 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's about 2 years ago, 29 May 2024. And he did this before Donald Trump won the 2024 elections to become president for a second time. Now, what were the predictions he highlighted, Helmut? The predictions were Donald Trump will win the elections.
Yeah.
Donald Trump will then push for one or other particular narrative internationally regarding Iran. Then Donald Trump will then push specifically for combat, for war. And then said war will ultimately end in a land ground invasion.
Yeah.
Now, I know before the ad break we ended on a different particular point that it was halfway through, but I'm just giving you these four particular scenarios. Now, what has happened so far is that we did see the first conflict happen last year, which was the 12-day war. So that did happen. And even though this year's particular conflict, it looks like a resumption of last year. You can just count them together as that it's open conflict. Because remember last year's particular conflict scenario,
the 12-day one,
did not end with a peace deal. There was no peace negotiation. They just called each other and said, hey, listen, can we stop this? And then both parties said, yeah, sure. And then everything was just went quiet from there. And until we started hearing rhetoric again between November up until February, because the accusations were being made. Oh, remember after 3 January, after Venezuela, that it's Iran and Cuba are next on the list.
Now throw in Greenland on that bucket.
No, but Greenland looked like Greenland is the tech bros. The motivation is the tech bros. Yeah. Reason being, there are mining companies associated to, three of the four tech companies. Like one is associated to, what's his name? What's the guy's name, Tochman? A Microsoft company, and the other one is associated to, I think it is Google. But it's like shifty mining startups. Because I never heard about them until these.
Oh, that's what you mean by shifty.
No, shifty being that they are no names. They are not what's the big mining company? They're not a Rio Tinto. They are not a, what's the other one from Australia? That big mining company from Australia. You know, that they're not like massive names. They're not a Glencore from the United Kingdom.
Like Rossing.
Then, but Rossing, no, Rossing is Namibia. The name of the company name, not the mine name. Rossing is the mine name.
And
the company name is the Rio Tinto, is the CGNC, you know, the Chinese company that has what's his name? Not Sokop Uranium.
There are
two Chinese uranium companies. The one owns Rossing, the other one is in Ezit, who's up Swakop up uranium at the largest open pit in Africa.
Yeah.
So it's the company name that you have to look at. These two companies, these two mining companies, for Greenland, that's why I'm showing you the diversion, that Greenland is a diversion. These guys are pursuing through economic goals. They are pursuing Greenland. So it's literally these billionaires have shares in these small mining ventures who are looking for rare earth metals to help with their particular AI drive and the AI expansion and AI adoption rate. And the idea was that you can see this play because you needed to understand where is Donald Trump coming with this particular perspective of saying, Denmark must hand over Greenland. So then they went and constructed that whole national security document that you and I analyzed,
yeah,
where they highlighted as well that, that Greenland must be handed over. And then that was the other variable. They thought Greenland would just be handed over. But then everyone was just putting up and, you know, closing ranks in Europe saying,
not happening.
What are you doing? And then you've got the scenario of the motivation behind Greenland, which has been, there have been discussions popping up of these mining companies seeking access to colonial maps, pre-1900 maps of Greenland, to start exploration. Now, they tried to gain access to the maps in, what was the country's name? Was it Sweden or was it Denmark or Netherlands? Primarily because many of the European, and you will find these maps, Ahmed, on online, eh? These pre-1900
era maps.
Yeah, these pre-1900 maps. And in terms of the territories, and, you know, remember the colonial discussion that you and I had back in at the start of this month with the Munich Security Conference, where Rubio went and said, Europe must feel proud of its contributions to human history. And we were like, which part of human history? Is it the colonialism that they invaded much, that they chopped up much of Africa and literally, you know, decimated South America?
Yeah.
Or is it the other things of European history that must be applauded? Which is obviously that technically you can only see from his wording, the colonial history is the part that he is applauding, that he is proud of.
Yeah.
But that's a side note. And I'm also digressing there. Now, bringing you back onto what's the motivation here in the Iran conflict, dear listeners. Now, the motivation here comes from the Israel lobby and the Christian Zionist lobby. Just so that you guys know, the Israel lobby, or as it would be called in the United States, the Jewish lobby, is the lobby specifically where this is specifically based upon that religious denomination, and the Christian Zionist, which is also a religious denomination, but now these are technically not Catholics, just to let you guys know. They're not my peoples. my peoples went and fought the Crusades, but I wasn't part of that discussion.
In the name of God.
Because the Crusades were another madness in its entirety. So
again, in the name of God,
the Christian Zionists are.
Is there a war that have been fought that have?
Never had a religious scenario.
So every war involves.
Actually, the war that was mentioned, the Greek war that was mentioned in this analysis by Jiang.
Yeah,
that was the one not fought on Christian on religious background.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
Yeah, and the one in Russia and Ukraine, that one also.
No. But here's a funny thing.
Yeah.
I loved it. I actually loved it because I've observed it so many times, and I even did it during the motivation as to where does this anti-Russian sentiment come from. They call it the anti-Russo sentiment.
Yeah.
So the anti-Russia sentiment is a Eurocentric sentiment, and it came about literally from the 1600s, 1700s, and so on. And even with one of the rulers that Russia had at the time, Ivan the Great, or, no, not Ivan the Great, Peter the Great. I'm sorry, we've got a colleague named Ivan. Ivan, sorry, that guy was not the great. He was known as Ivan the Terrible.
Oh no, there are two Ivans.
Yeah, I know there are two Ivans.
There was a great one, there was a terrible one.
But the terrible one is the more notorious one.
Yeah.
So Peter the Great.
Bruce Festivik was his son.
It's a, if you guys go look at Russian history, it's not a joke. You literally have brothers and sisters killing each other. I should announce that so loudly. But yeah, Russian history is another discussion on itself. But anyway, so, Peter the Great, when he married Catherine the Great, yeah, do you know why he's known as Peter the Great, Helmut?
Why?
Because he went and built St. Petersburg, which he named after himself.
Hang on, Peter the Great, the husband to
Catherine the Great. Yeah,
this is the fully grown king who was known to play with, with toys at an old age.
True.
Yeah.
His wife most got the city that I flew most through the 2 years back, yeah, 2024, Yekaterinburg, was named after her.
Yes, seriously, bro was supposed to be running a country and was...
No, he did. He tried to run a country. He was actually trying to reform the country in a very hard, difficult way. Meaning, St. Petersburg is modeled on Paris. It's modeled on Paris, and there was another, I think, Venice. It's modeled on Paris and Venice, St. Petersburg. If you go look at St. Petersburg today, you will see the layout of St. Petersburg looks like you are technically in Paris, but just in the Baltic Sea.
Oh.
On the Baltic Ocean, on the Baltic Sea coast. So, he literally went and built St. Petersburg. Then, he tried to bring in Western European sort of like cultural influences to try and reform something. Because he tried to bring some sort of a sophistication to his fellow Russian countrymen.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of his famous quotes was that he hated the barbarism of his fellow Russians. Look, I was not there, guys. These are historical quotes that people made. So,
I'm confusing Peter the, is it Peter the Great with Peter the Third? Peter the Third is the one that, held a trial for the rats that ate his toys. Toys, soldiers.
Isn't that where the story for the Nutcracker comes from?
Had a whole, prosecution going on there.
But isn't that the basis for the story of the Nutcracker?
I'm not sure, but I think so. But the thing is, they knew. Well, look, the rat put up one heck of a defense, but it lost.
Yeah, guys, you see my colleague here.
Legend hired Caesar for a lawyer. Bro lost that case. You think he's listening?
I hope not, Albert. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Back to seriousness.
So, the discussion that we obviously see in front of us now is that there are lobby groups. There are interest groups.
Yeah.
Now, game theory, like Jung outlined, and, I just read into the sort of like the understanding behind game theory, because game theory takes three formats. A single person perspective. Think of this like you literally playing a game, Single person.
Strategy games.
Yeah, it is strategy. But look at it like how you play video games, Albert.
Yeah.
It's either a single person.
Yeah. Solo, you can go squad.
Yeah, which is literally those particular scenarios. Then you have a two-person scenario. Yeah. Not squad, two people against each other.
Mm-hmm. Like 1v1.
Yeah, okay. Or P versus P, they say, player versus player.
Yeah.
Or you can have the multiplayer scenario, meaning that there are at least three parties.
Yeah.
And if there is more, it becomes a little bit uncontrollable, but game theory tries to limit it at three.
Yeah.
Now, what we are currently seeing is a three-party plus additional add-ons. Because the additional add-ons is now Oman, Qatar, UAE, those other guys that are the collateral damage currently.
Yeah.
So that's what's playing out. So we know what the motivation has been. The motivation comes through from is American-centric, meaning it is the Jewish lobby in the United States, and it is the Christian Zionist lobby in the United States. And both of them have a lot of money behind them.
Yeah.
There are a couple of billionaires there, we have to be honest, and there's a couple of millionaires there as well. Or a whole bunch of millionaires.
Yeah.
So we know who's telling Donald Trump, you in your foreign policy doctrine, you must apply this. Then, the second scenario has been, how is this going to happen? So what have we seen, Helmut? And I mentioned already, but there are variables. Meaning, the discussion is, Donald Trump is currently being asked, is there a clear strategy in this war of 2026?
Yeah.
I can emphatically say today, guys, there's been none.
Yeah, no, there's none.
There's not even been a motivation. Because the motivation doesn't even hold water. It cannot hold water.
And the motivations keep shifting.
And the motivations, yeah, they keep shifting. The motivations are now impacting the world, the football World Cup, FIFA's World Cup in the United States. Because, like you and I had pointed out with our discussion about after 3 January with Venezuela, because the United States and Venezuela are both in the same confederation, which is known as CONCACAF. But CONCACAF does not have a stipulation in it that says, if your government attacks another member of CONCACAF's government in an open war scenario, open conflict scenario, which brings the game, the sport, into disrepute in the confederation, the attacking country will be kicked out of or suspended from participation. That was what FIFA did. FIFA upheld the decision that the UEFA took. UEFA goes and changes that rule between 2024 to 2025. They go change it because they change their statutes. They take out that rule that that FIFA backed them on in 2022. Yeah, Helmut. There's a new sort of like a, if you can call it a constitution of UEFA. There's a new document. And that document does not include Clause 12. Or Section 12, or Article 12. Article 12 says...
Okay, I understand the legislations change all the time, but why now?
And here's the funny thing. The moment UEFA did that amendment to its article, its constitution document of these articles, because they removed that section from the new version. If you go into UEFA's website, you won't find that document. But you will find in the articles that FIFA had on its website regarding the suspension of the Russian Federation from any FIFA-related and UEFA-related activities is that FIFA supported the decision by UEFA on section or article XYZ.
The one that is now removed.
The one that is now removed in the new constitution document of UEFA.
Okay.
So which begs to ask you the question.
Yeah.
Did they do this to get Russia out of UEFA? To make that change? And now that they've made that change, would they allow Russia back into UEFA if a peace deal is struck between Russia and Ukraine? Because they removed the phrase that says...
The legislation that makes it illegal for Russia to participate. Now that...
Not just illegal.
Yeah.
The phrase that motivates... Because football today in Europe is an economic activity.
It
has a lot of money in it.
Yeah.
So the discussion is, if you bring an economic activity into disrepute for UEFA, what action should UEFA take against the member country? That was clearly outlined, which CONCACAF does not have. CONCACAF does not have it. You can go into the CONCACAF website right now, Helmut, and you can look for the statutes of CONCACAF. What members must do and must not do. They make no mention. The United States can go crazy in CONCACAF. They can invade Mexico. They can invade Canada. They can invade Honduras. They can go absolutely Donkey Kong crazy. If anyone knows who Donkey Kong was or is.
Now, on strategy, because... One question that's been asked this is mostly going to the Trump administration.
Yeah.
What's the motivation behind this? And are there going to be boots on the ground? And I understand there's something like there's something they call is it MEU? MEU marine soldiers, like
US Marine unit.
Yeah.
Okay, Helmut, that strategy is not complete, ne? Because 5,000 marine units, 5,000 marine soldiers will not cut it. I'll tell you today, as an invasion force, 5,000 marine soldiers will not cut it. And those 5,000 Marine soldiers were moved from Japan.
From Japan?
Yeah. And the surface to air defense was moved from South Korea. Remember what I said last week?
That's not helping your foreign policy, especially with your allies.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's not. Because if you have to be shifting army that you have basically, you have basically made me comfortable into not investing in my own defense, because you have made me promise that you will be, you know, you're my ally, you'll be here to defend me. And now that you are basically, you know, created chaos in your environment, something that something that was very avoidable. And now you're pulling the defense from my side. Now, what am I supposed to do with my borders if, my enemies now start licking their fingers and start, you know, trying to use that opportunity? How am I supposed to defend myself? But anyway. Back to the reasons behind the invasion being given. And a lot of them basically been given. Now, I just want to build up on what Anthony Blinken said to the Bloomberg during the an interview with Bloomberg. And one thing he pointed out was that Israel tried to, you know, to talk the Obama administration into going to war with Iran. Obama decided to go the diplomatic route instead of, you know, just going military confrontation, route. So basically, if Obama was to go with the idea of a military confrontation, what we are talking about today would have taken place during the Obama administration. Now, the same sort of like a proposal was made to the Biden administration a couple of years later, and then that was against Lebanon, and according to Blinken, it was based on what they later found out to be false information. Now, the word false information is something that I found very interesting, because that brought up a lot of invasion of Iraq type of excuse. We thought we were acting on legitimate intelligence. We thought Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. After killing thousands of people and misplacing a million and over a million, we realized that we were acting on false intelligence, and we are sorry, irrespective of how many people we killed or displaced. Now, if you are going to go to war, I'm not a military expert, but don't you think if you're going to go to war, you must have ironclad information, because people literally die. And one of the excuses again being used to justify, to explain the bomb that was, the tomahawk that was dropped on a school, killing over 170 something. People, most of whom were kids, the reasoning behind was that, it was based on outdated intelligence. Now, my problem is with this is 2003 invasion of Iraq, the excuse that was used later was that, it was based on more like, false intelligence of some sort. And the bombing of the school now is supposedly based on outdated intelligence, because the structure which was a school which was later found out to be a school was not a school before, I think, when the whole targeting and plans were being made. So again, if you are going to go to war, aren't you supposed to get ironclad information? Again, on pushing the Biden administration to go for a preemptive strike on Lebanon, Blinken would later describe that as a false intelligence. In other words, they could have gone to war with Lebanon based on false intelligence. Now, here's the thing. In the very same time that this whole exchange of missiles between Israel, US, and Iran is going on, at the same time, Israel is already militarily active, in southern Lebanon. And that's, as we speak. So it seems to me like, what Israel wanted to do during the Biden administration, that's to go to war with Iraq.
And Obama was like, you know what, let's go diplomacy. And what Israel wanted to do, that's to go to war with Lebanon, that's during the Biden administration. They have managed to accomplish all two in one administration. And the painful part is the Arab countries are now paying the price. Now, when asked the question, now that links to the Biden and Obama example, sort of like reflects in Marco Rubio's response to why now with regards to the war, to the war with Iran. Like, what's the motivation behind? While addressing what they have, is it a group of eight? Or no, there's a fancy name for it. The
G7.
No, there's a fancy name for it.
Oh.
It has an eight to it. But when he was asked what's going on, like why, what made the U.S. basically go, join? Because you have to understand, join this whole war. Now, what he said was, and I quote, according to The Guardian, it was abundantly clear that if Iran came under attack by anyone, the United States or Israel or anyone, they were going to respond and respond against the United States. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. That sounds to me like what happened during the Biden administration. The Biden administration clearly told them, we are going to defend you if someone attacks you, but if you attack first, we are not coming to your rescue. Now, in other words, Israel told the Biden administration, we have ironclad intelligence. Lebanon is going to attack us. So can you help us launch a preemptive strike? And the Biden administration said no. The Obama administration were told some of the exact same thing, that, well, we have ironclad intelligence that Iran was going to attack us. So help us launch a preemptive strike. Obama said no. From the look of things, Trump said yes to both. And the crazy part of it is now you're looking at,
which is the Israel lobby or the Jewish lobby.
Ow.
And because they've got most of the backing of the Christian Zionist lobby. So there, Hamad, already solved. There's your motivation.
So not being religious, Biden and Obama helped them a lot. That's what you're telling me.
Biden was a Catholic.
Biden was a Catholic.
Biden is a Catholic, so I have to say we again. Yeah, we've had our crusades.
You guys have had it all. Crusades.
We've had the crusades.
Colonialism.
Even though I'm a Namibian, even though I'm an African, I'm like, I don't want to say we, because I wasn't there 3,000 years that way.
Mm.
But unfortunately, that has happened already from that Christian perspective. The Catholics have had their crusades. But now it seems like the Christian Zionists have a new kind of a crusade. But the crusade is more like a subjugation of the Islamic world. A subjugation. I use the word subjugation.
Yeah.
Guess why, Helmut? If you go to many Muslim countries right now, they literally have laws. In the lay of the land, in their customary law, is that no new churches, no new Christian churches may be started in their countries. For example, in Egypt, the only Christians that they recognize are the Coptic Christians and the other ancient Christians, which are technically considered
Orthodox Christians.
Coptic is not Orthodox, but they look Orthodox. They are similar to the Orthodox Christians of Russia and Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
But Coptics are older than those guys.
Mm-hmm.
The Coptics come from Ethiopia, Eritrea, and into Egypt.
Yeah.
That's where you find the Coptics. Now, there's also another Christian denomination in Egypt, and both of them are considered like branches out now under the former Pope Francis of a branch out of Christianity. Just not like now, like the Anglicans today were also sort of like agreed back into the overall Catholic umbrella, because the Anglicans are now also Catholic. Yay to you guys. Yay. Instead of being associated to a guy who just wanted to marry 8 times. My goodness. And have kids 8 times. My goodness. Anyway, so yeah. So the Coptics are the only recognized Christians that can exist in the Egyptian framework. Now, why is that? Because Egypt is Muslim majority. So they've literally got a law that says no new Christian entities may open up. Because Egypt also is part of the Arab League of Nations. They're part of the Arab League. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the concerning part, Helmut. There, as many people would not know, that there are two kinds of Muslims. You get the Shiite Muslims and the Sunni Muslims. The Sunni Muslims are Saudi Arabia loyal. The Shiite Muslims are Iran loyal.
Oh, boy.
Hence the reason why there is a holy city in Iran and there is Mecca in
Saudi Arabia.
The overarching misperception that Christians have is that Mecca is the only holy city in Islam. It is not so. We don't hear much about Iran because not many people go to Iran, because you obviously hear about the propaganda happening around the world, specifically in the Western media, about Iran. But you could fly before this conflict situation. You could fly to Iran and you could go and check out Iran and you could go and visit that big mosque with its city right in front of it's in one of the other cities of Iran. It's not in Tehran. It's in another city because that's where an emperor, a Persian emperor was based in that city. So it was technically like his palace city or his royal city. So that is the other particular disclaimer. So you can also view that the Christian Zionists are technically viewing this as their own new age 21st century crusade against the Islamic world, which I don't understand for what.
Look, one thing that Noam Chomsky pointed out was that one thing a lot of people seem to forget about Christian Zionism is that it predates Zionism. Zionism, that's mostly emanating in, you know, more like emerging out of the Balfour Declaration founding of modern day states of Israel. Founders of the modern day state of Israel, Theodor Herzl themselves, they were not very much into the theology. They were more atheist than they were into this whole, bigger picture deity type of belief. How the whole thing basically switched from, Herzl's point of view to everything, must speak to, greater cosmic power is an interesting piece of history. Now, the thing about Christian Zionism is that, when people talk about Zionism, they more often just talk about, Judeo-Zionism, if you can look at it like that. But while Christian Zionism is very, 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 very hardcore, and it's what you describe far right conservative type of point of view, and I think it's safe to say Christian Zionism it's very simple. Christian Zionism predates Judeo-Zionism. Christian Zionism led to the founding of Judeo-Zionism. So although they have a lot of beliefs that are somewhat similar in terms of the future of the return of the Messiah, even though they slightly differ in a sense that most Christians believe in believe in Christ. Most he came, he died on the cross, and he we're just waiting for his second coming. But in Judaism, on the other hand, they don't believe in Christ as a deity. They you know, they're still, you know, they're still looking forward to the return of the Messiah. Mm. For them, he haven't returned yet. This is somewhat of a slight difference that I see in Christianity, you know, Christianity and Judaism. But, the whole thing is, you know, you have a lot of spiritual, more like a scriptural or theological literature that's guiding foreign policy, which is, history indicates, is a bad idea. It's a terrible idea.
How will it forever be a bad idea? Doing, conducting things on a religious basis. Now,
There's a reason why we have, especially in a lot of Western countries, you hear the term, you know, the separation of church and state. Because, for a very large part of Papal Rome, we realized as a religion, Christians, that mixing church and parliament is a terrible idea, because now the guys in church will start just having fantasies, scratching their head and telling parliament that the God we all believe in told me this and this and this, so, you know, just prep up the army, let's go and do his bidding.
But that is literally the confusion happening. Not in the US sense. Yeah. We've motivated that part. If you go look at Namibia's constitution, and you go look at, because you obviously did that, Helmut, but if you look at where did the laws come from that reinforces Namibia's constitution, it's literally like it has a hint and a spirit of the Ten Commandments of the Bible.
Yeah, you bet. That's a, you know, when you do introduction to law, you are looking at, one of the things that you look at is different types of laws, and natural law is one of them. And guess what comes up?
Religion.
Exactly.
And religion as the basis for lawmaking. Now, the scenario that you're highlighting is a little bit imperfect. The reason why I'm saying that is because history's precedence highlights that when religion was part of the lawmaking process, it was religion and the aristocracy, meaning the designated elite.
Yeah.
But because we are voting elites into office, that is a different discussion. Because now you don't know what that person's personal religious preference is.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. You don't know if that person goes to church every Sunday. We don't know, because who's got time to invade someone's privacy like that after 5 o'clock and
no one is
and between
that.
Monday and Friday?
Yeah, like the tricky part I'm pointing out here is that, like I just pointed out earlier, most of the, you know, religious hardliners have a lot of power, money, and influence. So they have the power to basically, to donate or back a lot of, whether it's think tanks or organizations like AIPAC to basically have the power to, you know, to seat and unseat members of parliament.
Mm.
They will back you up with all the money and power that they have. And most of them have a lot of shares in a lot of mainstream media companies. So, they will give you this, you know, they will give you the spotlight that you need to get to a certain position of power.
Yeah.
So, because of that power, a lot of people, even those ones that are atheists, will most likely, if they want to get to a certain place in the, you know, in the ranks of politics, they will obviously side with them.
They will.
Yeah.
So,
you end up at a place where, someone will tell you in private, "I don't believe in that whole crap," and they will put on a suit and attend a,
or sleep on Sundays and not even go to Easter Sunday or even start with the Lent process with Ash Wednesday.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm talking about the Catholic procedures here.
The question now here is, well, three predictions were made.
Yeah.
Trump is going to return to the White House, which he did. Trump is going to start a war with Iran, which he did. The third prediction is the one that is making everyone go like, okay, you know what, you've gotten this two correct. And the last one that he made was that the US is going to lose this war.
Mm.
Why? Now, a part of the prediction, if you look at it, is that actually, you know, the good professor gave Trump a lot of credit by going through like what Trump will have to do to get the American public's backing while going.
And those are the variables. those are the variables I mentioned at the start.
Yeah.
Because he didn't do this. He didn't motivate. Even in November, he did not motivate Helmut.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they did the national security strategy launch,
mm-hmm.
he gave a glimpse there of Iran. But still, between then, September, and now, February, Trump didn't motivate and he didn't go on a wide-scale campaign
mm-hmm.
to sort of like, what's that word? You know, there's another word for when you drag someone's name through the mud.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't do this because that discussion I made the reference of the British radio journalist that tried asking the Oxford lecturer or the Oxford professor to interpret international law, and the professor kept telling him, I cannot interpret it. I can only explain it based on what it says, meaning I can't change the meaning.
Mm-hmm.
I can't give you another fairy tale description. I can only explain what it asks for, what it says, because it's clear. And in this regard, the U.S. did not satisfy any of the requirements in international law, meaning they didn't notify this UN Security Council.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't submit. It's like a letter where you tell. Well, you remember that thing I described last week? It's a letter you've got to submit. And it's like an official document.
Mm.
And in that letter, you are literally telling the UN Security Council, I'm going to go dust up that guy. You just
for have, this and this and this reason.
For these other reasons.
Yeah.
You have a forewarning that I'm going to dust up that guy. Where has this happened in history before? And this is why I love Jiang's analysis, because he gives you exact reasons. The Iraq War.
Mm.
The Afghan War.
Oh, Colin Powell was busy in the Iraq War.
The... what happened to Syria? However, Jiang's explanation of Vietnam was a unique one that I did not hear much about. Mission creep. Mission creep was, we are sending technical advisors to the South Vietnamese.
Mm.
We are increasing from technical advisors now to observers. From observers to, we have to send sort of like protection units to protect various particular strategic sites in South Vietnam. And finally, we had to intervene because we saw the situation going
now
out of control.
Now we have a full-blown war.
Hence being that they didn't, during with the Vietnam War, the Americans did not need to motivate and convince the American public and the American Senate and Congress of why are they in Vietnam. Because he said literally they used mission creep. Meaning they steadily built it up. If you go with the official explanations that you would get on online about the Vietnam War, what did the Americans have an army? You would hear that they started with special advisors and observers,
yeah.
to that they ended up with an expeditionary force, the Marine Corps. And that's also the interesting thing. The Americans have two armies.
Mm-hmm.
Actually three. They've got the National Guard, which is internally in the U.S. They've got the Ranger Corps, which is the army, and then they've got the Marine Corps, which is the Navy's army. So, currently right now, Jiang made a prediction of, okay, his prediction was a bit loose-ended because he said it was based upon the NATO motivation. Remember that. That he needed to convince, Trump needed to convince NATO to join this fight.
Oh, well, he also didn't do that.
He did not do that,
yeah.
which is the other variable and the other anomaly, because he's now trying to threaten and manipulate NATO to do so. Spain has already said, I almost said the Afrikaans word for go. I almost said that word, you're live on it. Spain has already said, nah, my bro, go take a long one. Go for a long walk with that idea.
Yeah.
Keir Starmer this morning said no. Because I partially watched the Keir Starmer press conference.
This is why these things should be done in advance. He should have asked Tony Blair and Bush for... Those guys had an excellent template back in 2003.
Yeah, but they were not locked in a Ukraine war in the European theater with Russia. And this is the thing that Jiang did not highlight in his lecture. And I could see it when he mentioned NATO. He did not convince NATO. However, in NATO, the NATO discussion... The Europeans are already, they're already experiencing fatigue.
From the
Russia-Ukraine war. Why am I saying they're experiencing fatigue, Hamut? Because the US is not sending money anymore.
Ah.
Because Trump said, nah. He told Zelensky, "Nah, I'm not sending you money."
Okay, so hang on a second. He threatened to, you know, to fight them over Greenland, and then withdrew funding from NATO, and now he's asking for their help.
And then he asked NATO, "Please increase your budgets, your military budgets, to 5% of your GDPs individually," which they have done, except for Spain. Except for Spain, the other countries are saying, "Listen, why must we do this? Why do we have to do this? Why do we have to do that?" Which was the basis also of the Munich Security Conference.
Yeah.
Primarily because you could see that in the Marco Rubio speech back in this in January.
The one where he's glorifying colonialism, yeah.
There was no, it was in February, not in, because World Economic Forum is in January. A Munich Security Conference was in February. There is no indication that he gave there about saying Iran is on the target list for Europe.
Mm.
Iran is Europe's issue. However, there's one European guy that the Iranians have not forgotten. Even though I think the BBC interviewed them and asked them, yeah, do you guys have an issue with it? They interviewed the foreign minister, Larijani. Is the UK also in the sights of Iran? And then Larijani said, no, we don't have an issue with the UK. Lie. 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 Lie, lie.
Why?
Because Jiang's analysis starts from 1953.
Yeah, if you want Mossadegh. If you want to understand the Middle East, don't start it from 28 February.
Yeah,
especially everything involving Iran go to 1953.
But you're gonna ask me why do I say 19? Why is that a lie against?
Yeah.
One of the reasons is also Helmut because the British are protecting, what's that author who still has the fatwa on his name? Salman Rushdie. Salman Rushdie wrote the book, The Satanic Verses. In it, there's a way he describes the Prophet Muhammad.
Oh.
Now, if you know, like you and I know, what has happened in history as well, is in the Islamic sense, in Western literature, you do not illustrate or project the Prophet Muhammad in a negative light.
No.
Or in a caricature of any format, which is Charlie Hebdo's sort of like negative scenario. And then doesn't matter if the Europeans would argue their freedom of expression discussion, the scenario still has a double-edged sword to it, meaning yeah. It cuts both ways. Meaning you can anticipate someone always retaliating in a violent format yeah. in one or other way. And you can be protected under your Western laws and traditions of freedom of expression. But the discussion is the sort of like how this double-edged sword, which is technically the sword of Damocles, how it cuts. Mm-hmm. That's most the actual, the actual expression, the sword of Damocles. The sword of Damocles was a sword that hung over this Greek or Roman hero. And it's a sword that could kill him, or it's a sword that could save him. Hence, they call it the sword of Damocles. But anyway, in that scenario, because it's a sword that cuts both ways, yourself and the other party. But the analysis, Helmut, also highlights, and this is where the analysis ends, which we don't want to see. The land invasion.
The land invasion, which is an interesting way to basically wrap this whole thing up since we only have 12 minutes left. 2 days ago, the BBC put up this article. More US Marine and warships being moved to the Middle East, reports say. Now, this is more US Marines and warships are being deployed to the Middle East, and two officials confirmed CBS News and BBC. And the officials said the reinforcement were to come from the amphibious ready group and in its expedition expeditionary unit. I think this marine expeditionary unit. Exactly. Here we go. The unit headed by the USS Tripoli typically consists of around 5,000 sailors and marine distributed across several warships. The development comes as President Trump said U.S. forces had totally obliterated Iranian military infrastructure on a Kag Island in a Strait of Hormuz, and a critical waterway for global oil shipping. Now, that's the MEU. Is it the new that I found online? Basically, everyone talking about this Marine Expeditionary Unit. Mm. What do these guys do? Because a lot of explainers I came through seems to be explaining it as in they are more like your Group A. You know, a team that you send in if you are still contemplating a ground force invasion.
But here's the thing, Hamoud, they are way too tiny.
5,000. Have you seen the size of Iran?
Not just the size of Iran, the resistance force. Apparently, the IRGC, which is the Islamic Revolutionary Guard unit or Guard Corps, is like 300,000 strong. So, what are you going to do about 5,000 versus 300,000? And remember, the IRGC is literally a separate army from the Iranian army. These are the religious fanatics.
Okay, now you have... I think if anyone decided to just storm into a country without thinking things through, Bush stood a better chance with Iraq.
Bush is making Trump.
Yeah, in comparison.
Yeah, Bush
stood a better chance of.
I'm sorry for laughing, but I remember now how Bush used to speak, and I was like, why did they allow this guy on TV? But at least Bush had a sense of the occasion. Yeah. He stayed professional.
Yeah,
and he always showed up with his vice president. I don't know if it was Dick Cheney. Or if it was, what was the other guy's name?
Hang on a second, I think, yeah, okay.
He always showed up with his vice president. There were always two.
I think it was Dick Cheney.
Dick Cheney was the guy that was the CEO.
Of Halliburton. Before coming to.
So, he always showed up with Dick Cheney. It was the movie that was made about Dick Cheney, what's the guy that played Batman? Christian Bale played. Christian Bale played Dick Cheney. In terms of like the strategy. And it was those movies that I refused to watch. The moment you make a movie about a politician, that's a movie you throw into the dustbin.
Right here.
You throw that movie in the dustbin, in the toilet pot, you flush it away.
Yeah.
Because technically you can see the political pandering happening.
Yeah.
Now, every time George W. Bush and Dick Cheney showed up, there were two people corroborating the answers. You know, they were doing that thing that, you know, the two kids that were always naughty, they're always fine together. That we always do. You always find them together. And then have you ever heard how teachers try to solve an issue when they try to punish kids that do that?
Yeah.
They say, split them up. Don't keep them together in the same room. And that's literally sort of like the same tactic that Cheney and George W. Bush would play. But yeah, I mean, they kept it professional. Trump would just...
Now, see, this is the problem, right? Because if you just look at Iran by, from Google Maps and follow through Professor Chang's, analysis of why it's a nightmare, why thinking about sending in a ground, looking at this whole war between, a war with Iran, from a ground invasion standpoint, is a nightmare because of how inhospitable the terrain is.
Mm.
Then you throw in there the landmass, and then you look at the political atmosphere. The war is not supported in Iran or at home. You have a lot of, you have a lot of Americans that are asking themselves the same question. There's one black guy. I think his son is one of those, that has already been confirmed casualties. And one of the questions that he basically asked, and this was on camera, is one of those videos that I think have, just flared out viral by now, was that this was preventable. What are we doing there? So that means, in this war, Trump missed the most important part of any war.
Mm.
Any military expansion requires public relations. King Alfonso V of King Alfonso V of Portugal, before expanding into West Africa, first he did two things. One, he went to the Vatican to ask for religious blessing
and permission.
And permission of which,
because it was probably someone's cousin.
Yeah, he was told, you know what, you want to colonize people? Sure, you have my blessing. And King Henry the VIII went to the same institution for a divorce and was told, no, our God is okay with invasion, with colonialism. Divorce, that's where he draws the line. Which is just
why do you have an issue with your wife? She's my cousin. What did my cousin do to you? I've been trying for a son, you know.
Well, for me, it's either that or decapitation.
Can just make up an accusation that she's Chikama cheating on me, you know. That was the accusation he kept using.
That guy was brutal. But anyway, pardon me. The second thing that King Afonso VIII, King Afonso V does was, one, ask for a papal blessing, which he got. And two, then he realized that, you know what, he has the Vatican's green light. Now it's about convincing the Portuguese population to back him up. He found an author who was clearly hungry. The homeboy must have been broke as hell. Gomez de Zurara is this guy that was asked to basically write up a book to justify the expansion, not to the Vatican, but to the people on the ground. Mm. That's where you have this whole, you know, a lot of historians, when you ask them about the origin of skin color based racism, that's where you trace it to.
Mm.
This is a guy who was clearly broke. He was given money and he decided to write a book that justified the Portuguese expansion into modern day Guinea. Mm. That worked. That goes to show you that PR, especially when it comes to your people at home, in war means everything. Because like Professor Chang points out, you have to understand that the reason why you have to convince them is because the money that you need, it's taxpayers' money.
Mm.
The soldiers that you need, it's taxpayers' kids. Mm. So if you don't have their approval, you are screwed.
Mm.
Now, if a comedian at Eagle FM Studio is able to figure that out, a president surrounded by advisors, educated, well, idiots from the look of things, and think tanks, if they didn't see through that, how are they in that office? And, you know, this is one of those things that makes me think like, you and I can be presidential advisors.
Yes, we can be.
Clearly, because, I mean, if these guys are...
You know, I can be advisor on, you know, on Rehoboth affairs, and you can be advisor on, you know, Divundu affairs.
We can
do both, you know.
And everyone will be like, hey, you're a comedian, right? Yeah, nope. We don't want you starting a war with Russia. The thing is, get out of here. The biggest problem here is that now when...
Will you go and test your Russian now? Come on.
I think I'm too absorbed by the culture and the language. Yeah. Now, the thing is, when you look at it, this whole clear unpreparedness for, first of all, what the end goal is, what's the strategy, and, important factors that must be considered before going to war. They didn't consider that. And now everyone, including you and me, are going to pay the price for that lack of consideration of a lot of factors, because this whole thing is now impacting fuel prices.
Yep.
And when fuel prices are impacted, everything that requires transporting, the prices are also impacted. Now you and I are paying the price for some
half-brain strategy that does not make sense.
Yeah.
Worst part is, I do hope that the Namibian government has deep pockets to buffer. That fuel price, that severe fuel price increase. There's nothing they can do, Helmut.
There's nothing.
There's nothing they can do.
Yeah.
Cause even the guy from Dangote oil refinery, David Bird, said literally, we buy Nigerian oil, which is the 80% on international benchmark prices. The insurance for that Nigerian oil, he says, and it just has to drive from one side of the street, guys, to the other side of the street. That's all it has to do, the oil. It doesn't travel far.
Yeah.
But it is benchmarked because the Nigerian government has to record this, obviously, with the, what's that oil?
Is it OPEC?
With OPEC, yeah. So Dangote oil refinery has to buy Nigerian oil
in Nigeria.
in Nigeria, transported in Nigeria at international benchmark price, international prices. And they pay insurance on that oil that travels from one side of the street to the other side of the street in international prices. And the transport is at international prices. So even if you as a Namibian, for those of you Namibians that thought that our petrol will become cheap now when we start pumping, you can already see what's the issue with Nigeria.
So you can look at the Nigerian template and see that it's not going to happen in a way that in, especially it's, when it comes to the prices.
It's not going to happen. It's literally not going to happen, guys. Don't think our fuel will get cheaper. I also thought that it's a fairy tale. The Nigerians don't have cheaper fuel. They don't.
Okay, but when most products are produced at home, they are more often cheaper.
Yeah, Hamoud.
Except for fossil fuel. That doesn't make sense.
Because you obviously don't want to impact Russia's price, Saudi Arabia's price, US's price.
So there's a standardized price.
Yeah, they all agreed on the same price per barrel.
So irrespective of where you're getting it from.
And irrespective of the quality of the thing, a barrel of crude stays the same price barrel of crude.
So now one scary picture that Professor Chang points out is, one scary picture that Professor Chang points out is there is no clear strategy. Since there was no clear strategy going in Iran, there doesn't seem to be any clear strategy getting out of Iran. The U.S. president right now decides to throw in a towel and call it a victory, after killing the Ayatollah, they can decide, Professor Chang's point of view is that, it's going to be, especially when it comes to the countries that are now caught in a crossfire, talking about, you're talking about the Arabs, the Qataris, the Omani, all these, the Kuwaitis, all these guys will soon start looking for an alternative security strategy, because this one that they have been, that they have relied on for a very long time does not seem to hold water very well in this conflict, because they thought having US military bases is going to prevent them from military conflicts or being military being hit by a bunch of bombs. Only that theory have been proven to be wrong, because now they are literally fighting for their lives. And one thing you have to understand is that these are countries that are literally in the desert. So they have sand dunes on one side and salty water on the other side. So most of the water that they use is heavily reliant on physical infrastructure they call desalination plants, like the one we tried having here. Do we still have energy? How is it? But anyway, that means if Iran begins targeting these desalination plants, because you have to understand the strait that's been closed is the doorway that they use to get 70% to 80% of their food. So the food discussion is already questionable right now. So if Iran, from the look of things, is pushed to the corner, they start, basically, they could start aiming, because they've already destroyed a few, I think, is it in Kuwait or Oman, desalination plants. Although who struck the desalination plant is debatable. The Iranians are saying, no, that's not us. And at this point, everyone is going, wait, if it wasn't you, who was it? But it's in war, lying is the order of the day. Now, it could be anyone, for which doesn't make sense. But anyway, if Iran is cornered, and they start targeting those desalination plants, the entire Middle East could lose its ability to access fresh water, which means limited food, because the Strait of Hormuz is closed, and limited water. That really is something that should have been considered before going to this war. But no. And while Donald Trump is in the U.S. and Professor Chang is in Canada, I don't know why these two just did not meet, only so that Professor junk and just say, Mr. President, with all due respect, this is nuts. So that means, if Trump, withdraws the army and not send in an invasion force, the Arabs and the Qatari, the Omani and the Kuwaitis are going to be like, okay, so you said your military bases will protect us, only they didn't. So we'll start looking for alternative security measures. That could pop up in terms of security policies for the, you know, for the Middle Eastern countries. Now, the biggest problem is you begin to see there is, if they could just try to, and also let alone the, you know, the PR embarrassment. But here's the thing. If they send in invasion force, the PR at home is not very well. It's not doing very well because a lot of people are asking the same question of what the heck are we doing there? So the PR at home, manpower wise and financial wise, it's not a good one. Let alone the terrain of Iran for a ground invasion. All I know is if it wasn't for the economic fallout, I'll just get my popcorn and enjoy. But with that brings us to the end of today's Home Run. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. You and I should just be happy that we are, I don't know how many kilometers away. So coming up next is Business and Economic segment with David. Y'all stay tuned. After.